the idea of chanting, when you say a name of God, God's there. If you say it twice, God's for sure there twice. And the more you say it, the more you're accumulating points or karma. So at first, when you first chant, it's like an impersonal thing. You're making a sound, you're doing it, and you're trying to feel it, and you're just sensing it. It's not really a personal thing. It's just something you're doing, you're getting it together. It still works there. It still opens up a clarity and clears things up. But as you chant more and more, it becomes a more personal thing. You learn to get your emotions into it. When you get your emotions into the chant, you're establishing your, it's called bhava, or your special devotion to God, without it being about thoughts at all, because the chant is supposed to fight thoughts. So when you're chanting, you can't be thinking. And when you're not thinking, you're not doubting. Like, you just are. So it's continuously a process of making things holy or simple or clear or restoring innocence or just opening things up. Now, my disciplines in India, they had these black rooms, these meditation rooms you go into. They were supposed to be like a cave, but with some facilities, the bathroom, things like that in it. So people could go and be alone and meditate or pray without, or chant really, without having to deal with bugs and everything else. You could do it in a relative modern setting. These rooms started in the 50s, and they were popular instantly, and 90% were by women. Well, think about it. If you've got a kid, or three or four, and a husband, and you're cooking, you're running and scrambling, you've got a chance to get a week alone just to pray and be by yourself, no cooking, no phone calls, no hassles. It makes sense very quickly.
Once a month.
You know, like, and so people would do that, a lot of people do that once a year. Like, it's difficult to be totally alone for 24 hours because you have your normal sense of keeping things interesting that isn't there. Like, you have to be in your in the moment. As soon as you're measuring why you're doing there, as soon as you start thinking, it starts being a long time. So you're trying to undo your thinking and just get to pure experience. So when we're born, we have our emotions and we attach it by karma or from other lifetimes or whatever. We attach it to all sorts of things, making this is important, that's important. We have our emotions tied to thoughts and circumstances. And that's exactly what stops the silence. We make these things powerful or important. And how do we restore our innocence and get our emotions where they're just pure without conditions? Without attached to this thing or that thing or about tomorrow or this or that. Just to re-simplify. It's a really interesting, this idea of restoring innocence. It's a really interesting thing. And I always was surprised that a lot of women take, can't be done. You know, like, have a sense of restoring innocence. What is, like, there's a strata where that's open or that's not. But to me, it's a very clear thing. You work on it, it restores it. You start chanting, it changes your energy. It's like doing a psychic screen of your being. But it has effect on yourself and on the world. Now, so with our, over the last four sessions we did on the new moons, they've been very powerful. One lady came in and she'd been taking care of her mother, has been senile and going out, and she'd been so worried and so upset about it. She said, I don't know how long this is going on. She came, we had the meditation, she let go the next day. Mm-hmm. Another lady came in, she'd been worried about her house or everything, house sold in the next 3 days. She got a job out of the country, everything just connected like that.
So it frees up blockages? Like,
yeah, it frees up. We impose our own judgments and our own interference and our own sense of what's important. And we're saying, what I want is important. Who's saying that? There's a difference between bliss and peace and desire. I mean, God's beautiful. God gives you what you want. Whatever you ask for, you get. And you get the consequences of what you get. You know, so you want the husband, you get the husband, and then you got 30 years, I wanted this. This is it. I want to have a kid. This is, you know, like, that great God, oops, comes in. And, and that, but it's not that any of this, there's always stress and tension just being in a body. But it's not that it's wrong, it's just that it's not so peaceful. And we get our attachments... As soon as we get emotional fixation on something, we can't think straight. As soon as you want something, you can't think straight. Whether it's chocolate, you know, a person, something, you know, you can't. It's affecting the way you think and affecting everything you're doing. So by working at the roots of that and getting back to that simplicity of it, it's this is the process of chanting is really a tool to fight your mind. So I've learned different things. I've been chanting for a lot of years now, and every day I don't break the chain. But I discovered I can chant out loud, be chanting out loud fairly actively, energetically, and read a book at the same time without. So let me multitask. That was a real great freedom because I could read a spiritual book and be chanting out loud at the same time. That was a huge, suddenly multitasking. Now, when I'm in the car and it's raining and I stop at a stop sign, it's trouble, right? I'm stopping, I hear the ch-ch-ch, I start going, hurry home, and then the light changes, I'm not even noticing, honk, honk, and oh, yeah, okay. But you learn to, you can play with it. You know, you're walking down the street, it becomes, like, it's a rhythmical chant. I'm using rhythms to express the chants more than melodies. It can be done with melodies. Melodies are beautiful. I'm not so sensitive to melodies or so aware of them or have the training around. So I just, it's more about making it personal for you and going in. So the first part is just traditional type of chanting, back and forth, going around. Then we have a meditation. Then they have a few little things I read. And then we do some group chanting, which is like everybody has different chants to do at the same time. And it's, well, it's kind of, in a sort of, it's a different version of like doing Frère Jacques or at different sequences or something. It's like taking different sounds at the same time. And everyone's saying a name of God, but they're saying different names of God, and you're trying to hold yours together. And if you're being disturbed, it's only by a name of God. And you're trying to hold yours together. It forces a different type of concentration and experience of sound. That's not stereophonic. It's on another level. And, yeah?
Rob, what does Hari Om translate to in English?
Om is just the universal name of God. Hmm. Hari is too.
Is it self?
Oneness.
So
beyond thought.
Be?
Anything that's not, that the oneness includes every thought and every sensation. Thought's just another sensation. Then we think we're somebody. We think it. I think I'm this. I know this. I know that. That's just a thought. Just like a sensation comes and goes, thoughts come and go. We think we're thinking. But it's very possible thoughts are just various sensations we're responding to and being attached to, and they're going on. People go through all of them through lifetimes. But there's no doubt that thoughts are a disturbance to silence. So we're using sound, chanting, and chanting out loud as a sound to get an experience of silence. So the sound is the tool to get there.
So if Om is oneness, Hari is God.
But both are God. There's God. The only difference would be Hari is, it's almost like Hari is the personal image of God, and Om is the impersonal.
In the Hindu tradition?
Yeah.
So
Krishna is Hari, Narayana is Hari, like,
yeah.
Vishnu is Hari.
A respectful otherness?
No, there's no otherness.
Like last time, one of the women chanted her name.
That's because her name, it wasn't her name, she was chanting, she's taken on a Hindu name of the name of one of the gods, Saraswati.
Oh, okay.
So she was chanting the name, but it sounded funny, right? But that was the first time, and she didn't know what to do or anything. Mm. And her spiritual teacher had given her that name.
But Tennis once was chanting all of us.
I go through my morning. I'll chant everyone I know, everyone I've been in touch with, everyone I'm going to be in touch with. Yeah. I have a list. Takes me 20 minutes to get through everybody. Huh. I do that every day, and I've cleared the world. Huh. And then, so I have a list of saints, names of gods, people. You know, like if there's someone I'm mad at or something's one, I really chant that. Hmm. No, because it doesn't hurt. It's undoing the concepts. So, one of the things I was going to say about the black rooms or these meditation rooms is that it was very, very popular for pregnant women. Hmm. Because of the idea you could have a divine child. How do you make a child more holy? How do you improve your vibrations Like the child's becoming every vibration of the mother in her psyche from conception to birth. So any chanting in there, it's going to pay off somewhere. You know, it's not going to hurt. No, so there's many ways people have looked at chanting and come at it, but Hari is like it's kind of like, sometimes they say it's the redeemer of sins. It's the God as all forgiving, like Jesus forgives us, or it's that compassionate side, but it's more than that. God is like all life and all, Hari is all life and all action, just the personal sense of that. But it's funny because when you think God and oneness, really personal and impersonal dissolve and it's all one. It's the impersonal is personal. Like the compassionate Buddha. Buddha's supposed to be empty and detached, but he's compassionate. It's still personal, not totally impersonal. And the personal side becomes not I anyways. It still becomes kind of impersonal, but it's alive. It's not personal or impersonal. It's just living with no barriers. It's kind of like I live celibate life. I've been celibate for about 10 years. And I've been challenged on this or whatever, but really, I find it's not because I'm not open to love. I'm not as open to touch as I am to love. So, like, and if I'm touching, I get stupid.
I like most men.
Yeah. But if I'm not, it allows me to be open to everyone I meet without conditions. That feels good. You know, so I work to, I just try and hold it, work to do that. So you can't measure where you are. It's we're just all here anyways. I'm just in this process a certain way along. And now that we start doing these things together, it's like an addiction. Because we get this point at the new moon. Like, what's time to God? Time's nothing to God. Your horoscope's nothing, all this stuff doesn't mean anything when you get to your silence. But inside our attachments to time, new moons, solstices are special, special times. And if you can get your chant at special times, it has a huge effect. Now last month we had the chant right on the eclipse, and the new moon was right when we were chanting. And that had an extra, how do you say an extra? You can't say an extra presence. It just had a more sincere silence. Or if somebody wasn't being silent, there were more dramatic effects like from it. But the new moon is tomorrow morning, but I find it better to be chanting before it rather than after it, because you're still building up to your chant. So once you, what you'll find is after the day, we're just creating this chant to not think, to just be there, but the energy clears and it stays with you for a number of days. So the challenge becomes, how long can you keep it? Now, and one of the main things is to try and get your chanting regular. You know, so like it would be better to do 5 minutes every morning and 5 minutes every night than trying to do an hour a day and not being consistent with it. Because if you get it regular, it becomes regular. So just right between the waking dream and the sleeping dream and the waking dream, just before you get up, do a thing. It's easy if you're on your own. It's difficult if you're living with somebody. You know, if you're living with somebody, you may have to get to the bathroom or just do it in the shower, take a moment somewhere where you got a couple minutes to chant. But if you can get the chanting there, you set a standard that you begin to anticipate before you wake up, and it spreads into the day a little bit longer. And at night, you begin to anticipate before you go to sleep, and it goes into your dreams a little bit longer. If you can do that for 3 months without breaking the chain, it ends up, you're anticipating for 6 hours till it happens. It has its effect for 6 hours, and the next one is anticipating. So you end up with a 24-hour kind of protection sphere, or connection to the chanting. And then you start feeling it. You can't see it till you've done it. Once you get, if you can get 3 months done like that, and you look back, you go, whoa, where was I? You know, you see the process. You can't see it then. You still don't see where you're going, but you realize you've come somewhere, like you've taken a bath or something, and it's changed your life. Once you get that 3 months locked in, then you're not going to break the chain anyways. Then you just move it up to 5-6 minutes to 10 minutes, slowly. Look at that. So I started that years ago, and maybe over 30 years ago. Now I do 2 to 3 hours in the morning. I start and I think, I'm just going to do half an hour. Doesn't happen. It ends up oh geez, 3 hours. You know, now I got to do something today, and it's already like half the day's gone by. But I won the day. But just in talking about this, it's mostly just the value of chanting, making it personal, not thinking what anybody else is thinking. The mind fights it. The mind says, "What's this? What's this?" We're thinking about it. It's not about that. You're just chanting, so it shuts it up for a little while. And that's basically it. So, when as we go later in the last half after a meditation, so when we start chanting all together, when it comes time to stop, that will be about. It would be Hari Om, and then we'll do three Oms. Then we just be quiet for about 15 minutes. Okay, then we finish that. Then I take a little break or read a little bit. If you get thirsty when you're chanting, just stop, take a drink, whenever, you know, like, that's it. If you got to go to the bathroom, just get up and go. It's no big deal. We're going to be chanting some of the I Ching and sort of the zodiac. We chant part of the wheel. So we're chanting time, and we're going to chant the hexagrams for where the sun and moon are coming together, where they are right now. And it'll be for the new moon. So that we kind of finish with that. That's kind of our special, where we're chanting, and it's the energies of the moment that we're chanting it. So there's, can't measure it. It's just something that it's different. But the idea is to, all the intensity, and even when it's chanting together and just creating a strange sound, all the sound coming together just seems like a big hum. But you're hearing patterns inside of it when you're part of it. It's forcing a different level of concentration. Just a different level of hearing, of listening, of opening. That's great. Like that's, and people get so comfortable, they think chanting, put on a nice CD and somebody's musically singing, Om Namah Shivaya, you know, like, and you go along with it. Okay, it's nice, you're still thinking the name. But listening to a sweet thing is different than just being energy and doing it. You know, it's like saying, oh, what a nice baby, or changing things, or just dealing with it and making things happen. Different energy. One's more alive. So you want to make it yours, not second person. So it's not like, I'll play chants in the car, because it's just, it adds, but you try and chant with it. You try and go along with it, so that you're dynamically being there. Eventually you chant mentally. You get it, so you just got the pattern going on, and you got it going mentally. It's a very powerful way to chant, especially if you have your emotions attached to your mind when you're doing it. Difficultly, you need to do it for a few thousand hours orally before you're capable of doing that, because you can do it for a few minutes, but then you wander off, and you don't realize you've wandered off. And this huge amount of time goes by, and then you think, oh geez, got to pull back to the chant. So we're always doing that. Your mind goes off, you pull it back, you get into it again, like that. So when you're chanting, if you end up thinking of someone, just send a chant to them, come back. You're just sending the chants there, and it sort of loosens it up without being too rigid. Okay. This is some water from the Ganges. So I usually just put a little on my forehead before we start. Pardon? Oh yeah, and we have to write the names down of people. And this is, you don't have to do this, but I just put a little bit of ash on my forehead, but you can put on your wrist, or if you don't want to put on your forehead or whatever. It's called Vibhuti. It's kind of holy ash. This guy manifests it. He makes it appear when people take it.
Yeah,
supposed to. This here's fine. And, okay, so now, thank you. I need to always get along, and I forget about these notes. So just anyone you think about that you know is either struggling or in a crisis or not feeling well. And if you get along further on and we start chanting, then you remember something, you forgot someone, just think about them. Just imagine, throw their name in your mind, you know. And then we just fold it up, put it in the middle. Burn them a little bit later. So is this your first baby?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. So it's, you know, if it's a boy or girl?
Baby was too shy to tell.
Okay, it's good to know.
It's a good Virgo trait.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice to have the mystery. It's nice to have the mystery, but they're getting the energy too, right? So
we're six tonight.
Yeah. So,
baby, we're seven. What am I saying? We're seven tonight.
Six and a half. Yeah. Yeah, because until you take your first breath, your ego's not here.
That's right.
Until then, you're two souls in one body. You're still part of your mother. The changes are happening, but it's when you take your first breath that you're separate and you have your individual identity. And that identity, at that point, your pure potential. And also your karma is locked in and you have to play that out through your life.
Yeah.
And it's, you can't, even the saints can't avoid it. They got their karma, they come through, but they just take it, they don't get attached to it, they pay it off. Something difficult happens, well, let's pay that off. You know, now, I've been ripped off a few times from those big things and I think, well, geez, that play, but it's once I got finished ripped off, it opened up a doorway for something else that wouldn't have opened up if I hadn't paid off that debt. You know, so we, where we're attached, we see it as a curse, and when we're not, you look, oh, that was a blessing. That was a refinement. So, okay, we'll just start with three ohms, and then I'll start, and then Anne, and we'll just go around like that. Take a couple minutes each, and.
And at first, we're just chanting Om.
Hari Om. Yeah, first we do three Oms, then I'll start Hari Om. I'll do a few, and then everybody does it back. We'll go back, calling the spots back and forth. So that's what we're each going to do once around, so we're all in charge of it once. And then once it gets back to me, I'll just start chanting Hari Om, and I won't pause for people to respond. I'll just keep going, and then you just come in, and we just keep going and put that intensity together. And what we're doing, we're building up this intensity and the experience of it. And then when we hit silence, it's silent for a minute or so. No. Then when you start sitting in the silence and thoughts start coming, which they do, you try and think your chant. As soon as you notice it, you should be thinking your chant. As soon as you say, okay, I'm thinking, then you try and think your chant to diminish it a little bit.
Can you assign us a chant?
It's Hari Om. Hari Om. But you can do Hari Om is nice because you can do it Hari Om, you can do it slow, you can do it fast. You can
sing it.
Yeah.
That Midler
stuff. Yeah. And when we're going around, you can do it any which way. Like, there's always three or four ways I want to do it, but I usually just do a straight, normal way because I'm setting the pattern in motion. But you could do, like I normally would do a four-beat thing, Hari Om. Now I clap a lot when I'm chanting, so I keep a rhythm, I'm clapping. It just lets me get into it more. You're welcome to clap. But I'll do a Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Om. So Om is like two, Hari Om, Hari Om. But I can also, another way sometimes I do is Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Om. And you can just, there's no limits to what you can do. And then when you add names to it, it's different patterns. So it's not a restriction. It's just whatever is emotional or feels good for you. And when you get bored with one, you try something else. You just add something else to it. Now, I didn't really start trying to do different rhythms because I was bored. It just, the thought came and I thought, well, why don't I? You know, and then I got into the drumming and trying to do music and it just started, all the drum beats and the counting changed into my chanting. It became easier to count Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Om than 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. So as soon as I switched that, it just opened up things. And that's where this type of chanting came, a sort of a mix between regular chanting and drum patterning and doing things in a circle, only changing it from drum beats to names of God. Instead of just trying to get the adrenaline out, to take it and turn it, to use that energy and turn it in, and get high in the process, because everybody got so high from drum circles. This is such a liberating thing. That parallel in the chanting is where it needs, and if we get a bunch of us, we get used to doing it a long time, we'll be able to be a lot more improvisational, a lot more open, whoever, somebody could throw different things in or whatever. No, it's just not in that place yet. Okay.